right, welcome to Truth Culture Life. I am Royce Hood. Well, thank you so much for listening to Catholic Spirit Radio. We have a special guest today. We're joined by Kristen Terrio. I think I pronounced that right. Did I get it right?
Good job.
All right. Woo. Awesome. Yeah, we were practicing it because it's spelled very differently. What is that? Like French or?
It's French Canadian. Yep.
Oh,
yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. So I got married this last year. I went from one impronounceable name, Van Uden, to another one. So.
Van Uden. That's an interesting name.
Yeah.
Too.
Dutch to French.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's cool. Good for you. You. Yeah. My wife went from Kenny to Hood. And it was funny when we were like dating, she's like, yeah, I never thought about the name Hood before.
Yeah.
Sort of an odd last name, I guess. But anyway, yeah. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So this is providential that we have you this weekend, the opening weekend for the Cabrini movie. Mm-hmm. Have you seen Cabrini?
I have, yes. So as part of this project, I got a pre-screening link. So I got to watch it a couple weeks ago. And it was so good that I will definitely be back to see it on the big screen in the theater, too.
Oh, good for you. That's fun. Yeah, it's an awesome movie. So for those listening, Kristen Terrio is the author and she of two books. She's got The World is Too Small. And then what we're also relevant for Cabrini, she has The Mother Cabrini Companion. And that is literally the title of the book. Tell us a little bit about those two books and we'll talk about Cabrini some more.
Sure. So The World is Too Small is actually not my book, but I'm just talking about it. But that one's a reprint from the 1940s by a man named Theodore Maynard. And he wrote a biography of Mother Cabrini, pretty contemporary to her canonization, which was by Pope Pius XII in the 40s. So that was obviously if people wanted to learn more about her. And there was a lot of evidence available at that point from the canonization process. So that's a full bio that will go into the details of her life and a lot of her background. And then the book that I edited and wrote the introduction for is called The Mother Cabrini Companion. And that's meant really as both a companion to the movie and a yearly companion. So it's organized by 52 weeks. So there are meditations for each week of the year. So I'm envisioning that people will read this either, you know, weekly at adoration or on Sundays or something like that. Or if you really feel like it, you can read it all in one gulp. So it's something that lends itself, though, to being pondered and to not necessarily having to be rushed through. And this I drew from Mother Cabrini's own writings. So these are all her letters that she wrote home to her sisters from her various travels abroad when she was out and about founding missions. And so, of course, she has many letters that are extant, and some of them are more logistical, for example, writing to the cardinals and even to the Pope in order to establish her missions. But all of her letters to her sister are inspiring and very introspective, because we have to remember she was still serving her role as mother to them, even when she was far away from them remotely. So she is still writing to them in terms of spiritual direction and encouragement and really these universal inspirational themes emerge. So I've broken the book up into 52 different themes, some more similar to each other than others. One of my favorites is her meditations on the beauty of God's creation, because on these steamships, she would have ample opportunity to witness many different climates. And she always has something to say that links it back to the spiritual life. So, for example, if she goes through a storm, she'll liken that to the state of a soul that is a sinner. And this is what sin does to the soul, is it casts it into turmoil and darkness. And then the next day when the storm has cleared up and it's a beautiful, tranquil day on the ocean, she'll talk about how that is likened to a soul in the state of grace who enjoys God's friendship and basks in the sun of the state of grace. So really just unique and beautiful insights that she has to some of her experiences. And of course, as the first female missionary group to have this wide of a reach, she definitely had a lot of that travel experience and experience converting people from all different backgrounds. So I found them very interesting.
Wow, that's awesome. It sounds so interesting. How did you get involved in something like that? And then the next question would be, you know, how did you find all those writings?
Mm-hmm. So we produced these basically in the wake of the movie. So Angel Studios approached Sophia and we came up with three books to offer. So the biography, his companion, and then there's also a children's book, which is adorable, which has images that kind of, they're illustrations. So they're not, you know, stills from the movie, but they look like the characters in the film and are a nice tie in that way. So this was kind of a project that was under the gun, very quick, and I put this together in about a month. And so I found letters that were in the public domain on archive.org, which form the bulk of the book. And it's from a book called Travels of Mother Frances Xavier Cabrini. And then there's also a pretty good online digital archive at Cabrini University that has just kind of interesting supplementary things, including an image of her pectoral cross and some of her, the other relics associated with Mother Cabrini. So those are all available for anyone throughout the world. And then I have not yet been, but as you know, as this project concludes, I really hope to go to at least one of the Mother Cabrini shrines here in the US. So there's one in New York City, Chicago, and Denver. And so the New York City one is right near the Met Cloisters, actually. So hopefully we'll be visiting those in the near future.
Yeah. And is Cabrini University, wasn't there one in Pennsylvania or?
I'm not sure exactly where it is.
Yeah, I know I've seen it. And the producers of Cabrini, the Wolfington family, mm-hmm. are from Pennsylvania.
Okay. Yeah, and you're right. It is in Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so interesting. And yeah. I think it's like, I don't know. I know that. I believe that college is merging with another college. There's like some interesting things happening there, but the fact that they had that archive is really, really cool. Mm-hmm. I wonder, do you have access to one of the writings? Like, could you, is there anything like a snippet or something you could read for our listeners to give some context of like, of her writing style? Yes,
definitely. Let's see. I guess kind of going off of the topic I had brought up earlier in the meditations of creation, I can read a few of those passages.
Yeah, sure. Go so for
here's
it.
Here's one from a transatlantic voyage. She says, "At the sight of the sea, many beautiful thoughts and feelings arise within one. The sky is blue and the horizon is vast. It is the image of the love of God when it takes possession of a soul and makes it capable of an immensity of holy deeds." So just wow. So sweet. and then in that vein, a bit later, she discusses actually how God brought her through this kind of dangerous, tenuous moment where the ship approached an ice field. And of course, this is also interesting because this is a pre-Titanic account of ocean liner travel. And so that disaster had obviously not happened yet and had not struck fear into the hearts of passengers. But this is all really turn of the century, so before 1912. So she writes, "I write after having assisted at a spectacle quite new to myself and also new to some of the sailors. About 11 o'clock, we saw ourselves surrounded by enormous masses of ice. At first, they appeared to be things of no importance, like white doves resting on the water. But afterwards, little by little, they grew much larger. They took enormous proportions, and when we got nearer to them, we saw that they were about 12 times larger than our ship. The captain reduced the speed of the engines and took a different route to avoid them. But for all that, at one moment, we were only a distance of about 60 yards from them. Now we see some of them in the distance. We feel afraid of the coming night. Perhaps then there will be danger, but we leave ourselves in the hands of the good Jesus." And she goes on the next day to discuss how they did survive that and how she attributes that to the grace of God. So it's just really beautiful, like these everyday inconveniences she always cloaks in a more spiritual language.
You know, that's one art that we've lost as like a civilization. It, you know, the handwritten notes, the mm-hmm. handwritten, even like diary entries, right? I mean, almost everybody now probably just posts something online or they write notes on their phone. And I just feel like at some point there's going to be this like blackout in archaeology when they're looking back on this period in time. They're going to be like, what were those people up to? hopefully the digital records will be preserved in some fashion, but there's something so special about handwritten notes and handwritten reflections. And it's fun to think about. Like, I'm happy you provided some context there. Like, you know, she's on a ship and doing these dangerous crossings of the Atlantic. I mean, that's that's mind-boggling too.
Yeah, and she was not without fear, definitely. She talks about how she and the sisters she traveled with were always seasick, and they had to spend days below deck, and then she would always try to push through and to get some of her duties and prayers and examines done and what have you, but sometimes they were just too sick for that. So she did face a lot of adversity, and as somebody who also gets seasick, I can only sympathize.
That's funny. I actually lived on a ship for 3 months. Oh, cool. And I loved every minute of it. There's something incredibly humbling about, you know, realizing you're just like a little tiny speck in the middle of this vast ocean, mm-hmm. and you can't see land. And at night was my favorite time, because when you look up at the stars at night, goodness, you see stars that other people don't ever see because of the light pollution, and there's no light pollution out in the ocean. So
that's amazing.
It's just incredible. Meteor showers and just phenomenal. I actually was in a hurricane on a ship once, in the ocean, which is really, really interesting. Crazy. Yeah, I'm going to write a book about that one day.
You should. I would read that.
you can edit it for me when it's
done. There we go.
So Cabrini, for our listeners, she was born July 15th, 1850, in Sant'Angelo, Italy. I'm probably saying that wrong.
Yeah, it's in the north, the Lombard region.
Yep. And she died December 22nd, 1917. She was just 67 years old. She died at Columbus Hospital in Chicago. And she is enshrined in New York City at the St. Francis Cabrini Shrine. So it just is such an interesting, and it looks like she was canonized July 7th, 1946, which is pretty quickly after her death, if you think about it.
Yeah.
But her work, I know at one point, one of the things I learned from watching the movie was that her real estate holdings rivaled that of the wealthiest families on earth at one point.
Wow.
And she was a charity. She was like a corporation soul or something like that, but she was the charitable head of her organization, and people were donating so much land to her ministry that she owned more real estate than just about anybody else. And
that's amazing.
And some of her real estate is prized. I mean, just extremely valuable. So from a financial standpoint, but she didn't care. She came from such humble origins, and her mission was caring for others, which is what resonated with me about the film. I was really blessed, Kristen, to get to know the producers back I guess it was in the falls when I got introduced to them. And then we actually hosted Eustace Wolfington and some of the family of the executive producer here in Peoria.
Oh, cool.
For a screening. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
So I'm so excited that you're involved with this now, and I can't wait to see the book.
I know. It's got, of course, the movie branding on it, so we were able to use some of those amazing stills from the movie, because one thing that impressed me was that it was just such a visually appealing film, because oftentimes with Catholic or Christian movies, you can kind of be worried about this or worried about budget production and et cetera. But it was stunning, especially as a period piece. The costumes were on point. The settings were all very accurate. So I think that'll help it to have a lot of outward appeal to perhaps draw in some audience members who may not otherwise go see it.
Yeah, I agree. I couldn't agree with you more. The cinematography was beautiful. The quality of the story was fantastic. And the crew behind that on the production side, you know, Alejandro and Eduardo, I mean, those are the Bella guys. Those are the Little Boy guys, the Sound of Freedom guys.
Right.
And those are the kind of pictures that those fellas have been involved with. And they're truly using their talents for good. Yeah, I don't want to disrespect any Catholic filmmakers, but I'm totally against cheesy Catholic films,
because
our church has like the richest stories on earth.
Yes.
The most there's no shortage of scripts and no shortage of inspiration that could be great. And there have been groups that have attempted to make really, there's one film, I won't say who it is. And it's on like Amazon. It's awful. They tell a story of a certain saint, and they have like this 50-year-old actor playing the saint. And then they do a recap from his childhood, and it is the same 50-year-old actor wearing a boy's wig.
What?
It's so bad. It's so bad. I saw it and I just was like, yeah. And again, I don't want to badmouth because the intent was good, but dude, go get your grandkid to play that part.
Yeah, that.
Right? Like, oh my gosh, it just makes us look like fools anyway. So God love them. We need more high quality.
Yes.
Film. And
right, the stories deserve to be told at that level, because like you said, these are the greatest stories ever told. So
that's it, the greatest stories ever told. I mean, yeah. The Saints, like one of my favorite all-time movies, and then I want to hear yours, favorite all-time Catholic movies is The Reluctant Saint. Have you seen it?
I've not seen that. What's that about?
Oh my gosh, homework. Yeah,
I'm missing out.
I don't even like you anymore. I'm joking. No, you have to see it. It's about St. Joseph of Cupertino.
Oh, okay.
It's, I don't know, 1950s, 60s, nice. Something like that. It's black and white.
Awesome.
It's actually Love streaming them. Now on Amazon. You can find it on YouTube for free, but it's on Amazon, I think. It's, you have to watch it. Like, seriously, get your husband tonight, get some popcorn.
Yeah, right.
You guys will laugh. You'll cry. It's so well done. Such a great story, but it's old. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it needs to be redone. So somebody needs to remake mm-hmm. that movie.
Yeah. How did they manage to do the levitation with the special effects?
It's awesome. They literally probably used a ladder and you can't see the ladder. And he's just like somehow floating above. Yeah, it's so fun. Love it's it. So, like they did that on a relatively low budget, I would imagine. Yeah. And it's so good. Okay. What's your favorite Catholic movie? Go.
I think I'll have to be kind of mainstream and say The Passion. I mean, it's just unbeatable for me. Yeah.
I mean, come on. You can't. It's the highest, I think the highest grossing film of all time, or at least
probably, up there. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a trilogy. So my understanding is that Jim and that's Mel Gibson are hard at work on the sequel to that.
That's right.
Only taking 20 years. Yeah, maybe you'll do the companion book for that one.
Yeah, who knows? The sky's the limit.
All right, let's jump into a commercial break. This is a fun conversation. I always enjoy talking about film and the media side of the Catholic world. So if you can stick around, we'd love to have you back on the other side of this break. You're listening to Truth, Culture, Life at Catholic Spirit Radio. We'll be right back.
My fingers for battle.
We are the Easter people. That joyful quote from Pope St. John Paul II is truly beautiful. Catholic Spirit Radio has plans to broadcast more quotes, facts, and personal stories about this holy and beloved man. Hi, I'm Debbie Giorgiani from EWTN Radio, and I will again be the host of Catholic Spirit Radio's Carathon from April 2nd through the 5th. Our focus this year is St. John Paul II, so you won't want to miss a single day of our special programming. We'll have plenty of other things to keep you entertained as well, including local and national guests, a gift for every donor, and daily drawings. Pope John Paul II reminds us that each of us are called to evangelize, and when you make a donation during the Carathon, you are helping to pay bills, update equipment, and create resources which share the good news of our faith. The Catholic Spirit Radio Network does good work for you. They are a nonprofit and definitely need your financial and prayerful help to continue broadcasting throughout central and northern Illinois. Spend time with us for Catholic Spirit Radio's Carathon and show that you care on April 2nd through the 5th.
All right, welcome back to Truth, Culture, Life at Catholic Spirit Radio. Please be sure to check out the Catholic Spirit Radio app at catholicspiritradio.com so you can listen to this and other programs just about anywhere. We are back with our guest, Kristen. I'm going to try to say your name again. Terrio?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Woohoo. Awesome. I am so good at mispronouncing people's names. So far, I don't know how I've gotten yours right, but
I know.
I'm glad I did.
3 for 3 at this point.
Yeah. 3 for 3. That's good. That's a roll.
Nice.
So we were talking about some of the work that you were involved with. Did you help to edit The World is Too Small? Is that what you said on the other side of the break?
No, I edited the Mother Cabrini Companion. Okay. So I took that. I basically constructed that book because I drew it from her letters and organized it and wrote the introduction and gave the themes. The World is Too Small. I'm just helping as the spokesperson for that.
That's the spokesperson. Got it. I got confused and I'll probably remain confused because that's my state of life generally. So yeah, forgive me for getting that part wrong. So anyway, Sophia Institute's amazing. Like over the last year, I've been really blessed to get to know some of the great folks there. And you all have sent a number of amazing authors and to our show. And it's been great. Like I am so impressed by the quality of work that Sophia is cranking out left and right.
Thank you. We're happy to hear that. I'll pass that along.
Yeah, do it. I mean, and I get that reaction from my co-host, Father Michael Orsi, who's in Naples. He's not with us today, but he and I were talking about that recently, and definitely inspiring. How do you guys do it? Like, how do you handle such a high volume of new releases while maintaining like consistency and quality? And
it's very difficult, especially with this project, which is so much of a whirlwind, just trying to get it out to match the movie date, or to be as soon after the movie date as possible. But I've been kind of in a unique position because I've gotten to see this process from all different angles. So I think the last time I was on your show, we talked about my book, When the Sickle Swings, which I wrote and then was published by Sophia. And so I kind of got the perspective of the author throughout that process. And then on this side of things, of course, I'm involved in the post-production with promoting the book on shows like yours and just doing the media circuit for that. And then also in the middle of that is all of the stuff that goes on behind the scenes. So the back and forth on the editing and the agonizing decisions over the cover and seeking endorsements and all of these things. And so in this one, I had a good process of working with the editorial team to come up with the best way to format this. And so, for example, we decided to include some journaling pages at the end of each week, because this is really set up as a devotional, as something that's meant to be an interactive book. So not just something that you read once, but something that you can go back time and time again, take notes, feel free to mark this book up, unless it's in the library, obviously, but this is something that you're really meant to fold the pages down and highlight and write notes at the end. And I think that's really in the spirit of how Mother Cabrini intended these writings to be met, was with this sort of active urge, as of course she writes to her sisters. She is always imploring them to either pray more or examine their consciences or take up a certain virtue. And so I think she'd be happy that others are kind of taking that more active approach to her work.
Yeah, she strikes me as like a no-nonsense woman. Like, you know, the sort of the sweet Italian grandmother, but more like she will whack somebody in the head with a broom if she needed to. That is my interpretation of her. And I mean that like in a good way. She did not take no for an answer. And she was determined. And I love some of my favorite quotes from the movie are like the quotes that deal with the fact that she's like, you know, mission first, the money will come. You know, God first, the money will come. Like, let's trust in, really, it's what I refer to as the Holy Spirit action plan in many ways.
That's a good way of putting it. And I think that this really comes through in the movie, is just her tenacity, because we see in this drawn out process of even getting her mission established in New York, never mind all the other countries, just how much bureaucracy she had to fight through with the mayor and utilizing the newspaper and just raising awareness and money for her cause before it had really taken off. And that is just one of these many missions that she founded. So the letters are interesting because they pick up after the movie leaves off. So this is post New York. This is several years after, where of course she's now traveling to establish missions elsewhere. And so she is treated with a sort of deference and respect on board these steamships, for example. And I think, like, yes, she had even during her lifetime managed to establish this reputation as someone who had this angelic, beatific calm and peace about her, but also somebody who was, like you said, not going to take no for an answer and was going to fight till the end for those who were in her care.
Yeah, amen. That is what it reminds me of. One of the stories that I sort of extrapolated from the movie, and I think Mr. Wolfington, the executive producer, talked about a bit more when he gave some comments afterwards. But like when the Archbishop at the time of New York I can't remember if it was Art Fishburne or the Cardinal, but anyway, basically said like, hey, listen, I'll let you go ahead and open your mission and you can try to, you know, raise money for your clinic, but you're not allowed to raise any money within the churches. Like,
Yeah, that part surprised me. I was wondering, is that how it happened? Yeah, I don't know.
And I think it was. And that's not totally uncommon, especially back then. And even that happens now sometimes where we see, you know, ministries like sort of afraid of what's known today as donor fatigue, right? But but what's so funny is, so after the New York Times issued their article of her work in the New York ghettos and Five Points, the money came pouring in so quickly that at some point or another, the Archbishop called up Sister Cabrini or Mother Cabrini and basically asked her to contribute financially, like basically wanted to borrow money from her. So, you can't use our resources. We'll bless you. It will not stand in your way. Good luck. And then, by the way, can we borrow something? I just think that's hilarious that, again, just the drive that she had.
It's always uncomfortable asking for money, as everyone in Catholic media knows. So she had that finesse for sure.
That is the worst thing in the world, is asking for money.
I hate it.
Right? Me too. I know. I'm in that process. We've got a film that I'm working on called Incorruptible, and it's one of those things where it's like, every few months we need to raise more capital for it. And it's nice when you get one or two people that are like, okay, we'll help you out. Just let us know what you need.
Right.
The other bad thing I have going for me is I'm a lawyer. No one ever wants to give a lawyer money.
That's true.
Yeah. It's so true.
Nobody trusts you guys.
I tell people, like, if I was cooking steak, I've realized like nobody minds paying, you don't mind paying money for a good meal at a restaurant, right? So I should have been a chef, I guess. I don't know. Yeah, right. Anyway, this is so much fun. It reminds me, have you seen the movie Bella?
I did a long time ago, though. I would have to rewatch it.
Yeah. So that movie had a companion book.
Okay.
And I love the fact that this one does too. And it's the same crew the production side.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And that companion book was amazing. And that companion book was a bit different in that it included a lot of behind the scenes footage from Bella.
Oh, right. Yeah.
It just makes me think, I can't wait to see this book. So when does it come out, the companion?
So we're hoping for April 2nd. That's the date on the website right now. So if the printers manage to be on time and everything. So pray for a easy delivery of all this. But
awesome.
Yes. And we have stills of the movie in this book, but nothing quite behind the scenes. But I picked these from their library. And I think there's some of, in my opinion, the most stunning shots from the movie and those that really capture her spirit. So
that's great. Yeah. So what we're talking about, for those that are just tuning in, we're speaking with Kristen Terrio, who helped to edit the Mother Cabrini companion book, which it looks like will come out April 2nd through Sophia Institute. And for those that haven't gone to see Cabrini, all my listeners know that we hosted a screening in Peoria, which was a ton of fun. We had the bishop. We actually had Fulton Sheen's great niece came, which was amazing. Wow. Everything, just people from all over came to it. It was a packed house, and it was so much fun being able to host the producers here. Yeah. So a lot of us got to actually see it months before anybody else, which is so cool.
On a big screen. Lucky you.
Oh, it was so much fun. And it was great. This is awesome. So check out the companion book as well. If you're listening, you can go to sophiainstitute.com and check out their whole catalog. And then also be sure to check out The World Is Too Small, which it sounds interesting as well.
There's always more to discover of her. And Mother Cabrini is somebody who I am embarrassed to admit, before this project, I wasn't that familiar with. And I would sometimes even get her confused with Elizabeth Ann Seton, for example, because they had such similar ministries in America. And so I am really happy that all of these letters just exist in the first place, so we can get to know her on that more personal level.
Yeah, it's I agree. Actually, I knew very little about Mother Cabrini. I had heard the name Francis Xavier Cabrini. I had no clue who she was. One story that really resonated with me, because it shows how much impact Like when we, like some people are called to do big things, other people do little things. It doesn't matter. As long as we're working to do God's will and be instruments of his will, we can make an impact. So a young Mother Teresa was inspired by the work of Mother Cabrini.
That's right. Yes. Right?
And I just think that's so cool. Like that trickle effect. And then today, like the film that I'm working on about Sister Wilhelmina from the Benedictines in Gower, I mean, she was inspired by Cabrini and by Mother Teresa. And it's just amazing how these saintly women like are following in their footsteps. And I think about like when I was a kid, like, I don't know. I wasn't catechized at a young age the way that we're catechizing our children. So like I wanted to grow up to be Jean-Claude Van Damme, for example. I don't know if you know who that is. I'm kind of older, I guess.
Is that like the Pink Panther?
Panther, Peter Sellers. Peter Sellers was like a funny guy. No, Jean-Claude Van Damme was like a karate guy, like a boxer, movie called Bloodsport. Like it was violent stuff.
Okay, so he was definitely not a saint.
Yeah, I should not have been watching those movies as like an 8-year-old boy.
Yeah.
But somehow I was.
Somehow snuck it in.
Yeah, but I think about like the role models that my kids have. Like mm-hmm. we're watching movies like The Reluctant Saint, and mm-hmm. I take them to like Cabrini, and like, wow, that's what kids need to aspire. There's so much craziness in the world. We need more saints.
Yeah, no, it's so great to have that just available now. Like you said, there were great Catholic films, even, you know, as early as the 50s and before, but now with more interest in this type of thing and hopefully more media companies being involved, there will be a wider variety to choose from to see which saint speaks to you the most. And I also found it amazing that, of course, all of our favorite saints have favorite saints. So as you were saying with Mother Wilhelmina and Mother Teresa being inspired by Mother Cabrini, Mother Cabrini herself also had her favorite saints. So it was really cool to learn about her devotion to the Sacred Heart, obviously, because of missionary Sisters of the Sacred Heart, but also her devotion to Francis Xavier. And mm-hmm. she took that middle name, Saviero, after him. And she was really, of course, inspired by his missionary work. So she, a few times in the companion, I included letters where she quotes him and kind of relays some of his advice for how to convert and how to be a missionary and express that missionary zeal while, as Francis de Sales says, winning more converts with honey than with vinegar.
I like that. Winning with honey with vinegar. Yeah. It's so easy to be militant and to kind of, you know, splash vinegar on people versus attract them with honey. It's tough to know. Like, I think there's a balance, but that, like, I think about like the politics and all the other crazy stuff that gets so divisive. Wow. Like we could learn a lot from her. So hopefully this movie is going to do a lot of good. My guess is it's interesting though. One point that I want to tell you, like when we had the screening, it wasn't just Catholics that I invited. I invited professionals from the community who I've worked with before. And there was a few people there that were like fallen away Catholics or Catholics sort of in name only and just really not supporting positions in government and so forth who, that mm-hmm. are, you know, conducive to the Catholic Church at all. Mm-hmm. And one of those individuals hugged me after the film. It was like, wow, that was so cool. I had no idea about her. I'm going to read all about her. And that's
amazing.
I feel like, you know, one of the criticisms I've heard of the Cabrini movie is that there was very little in the way of, it wasn't preachy.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a movie that you're going to go see a lot of prayer in. And, mm-hmm. but Eustace Wolfington, the executive director, explained that it was intentional. The prayer is Mother Cabrini. The prayer is her life. It's her example. And if we had made the movie preachy, we would have just been preaching to the choir. Instead, we made this movie as broad as possible about this incredible saint's life. And it's going to draw people in. They're going to ask questions. They're going to Google her name. They're going to get the companion book. They're going to learn about her. And in doing so, we can make an impact. Anyway, that's the premise of
how
it was done.
Hopefully planting all those seeds. And that kind of reminds me of a story Mother Cabrini tells that I include in the companion about a Protestant lady who was their companion on a voyage, transatlantic journey. And she was just kind of really interested in the sisters' work and in their mission and would just kind of make conversation with them on board and at meals. and wasn't asking too much about the faith. But then at the end of the journey, Mother Cabrini gifted her with a cross just as a remembrance of their friendship. And the lady said, maybe I will be a Catholic one day. And just like that, the seed was planted. And it only took this one interaction, really, over the course of a week for this to happen.
That's how it works. And I don't know. I just feel like the church, when people, the more people dig, the more they find home at the Catholic Church.
Yeah, it becomes irresistible at a certain point.
It's irresistible. Like, it's easy, you know, if you've grown up in the Protestant world, and I was exposed to all sorts of different denominations as a young man before I really found my way home to the church. And it's incredible, like, especially when you look at the history, it's hard to deny the divinity of the church itself. Yeah. Anyway, this is such a great conversation. It was so nice having you on the program. I thank you for your work with Sophia, and excited to hear more about the Mother Cabrini Companion.
Yeah. Awesome. Thanks so much for having me. And I hope people enjoy the book and the movie.
All right. Well, we'll be sure to have you back next time you've got a project in the works.
Sounds great.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. God bless.
You're listening to Truth Culture Life at Catholic Spirit Radio. We'll be right back.
We are the Easter people. That joyful quote from Pope St. John Paul II is truly beautiful. Catholic Spirit Radio has plans to broadcast more quotes, facts, and personal stories about this holy and beloved man. Hi, I'm Debbie Giorgiani from EWTN Radio, and I will again be the host of Catholic Spirit Radio's Carathon from April 2nd through the 5th. Our focus this year is St. John Paul II, so you won't want to miss a single day of our special programming. We'll have plenty of other things to keep you entertained as well, including local and national guests, a gift for every donor, and daily drawings. Pope John Paul II reminds us that each of us are called to evangelize, and when you make a donation during the Carathon, you are helping to pay bills, update equipment, and create resources which share the good news of our faith. The Catholic Spirit Radio Network does good work for you. They are a nonprofit and definitely need your financial and prayerful help to continue broadcasting throughout central and northern Illinois. Spend time with us for Catholic Spirit Radio's Carathon and show that you care on April 2nd through the 5th.
All right, welcome back to Truth Culture Life at Catholic Spirit Radio. You were listening to an interview with Kristen Tario, who is an editor over at Sophia Institute, and she had worked on the Mother Cabrini Companion book that comes out, looks like April 2nd. I tried to get Eustace Wolfington on the show this weekend, but I'm a small fish. He's a huge fish, and I'm sure he's got all sorts of big media interviews in the works, with Cabrini being the opening weekend. How exciting. Some of you may have schlepped to Peoria from the Bloomington Market. I don't know. We really had fun at that screening. We had about 300 people back in December, and it was just so much fun, being able to see people's reaction. And I can't wait to see the movie, because frankly, I didn't get to watch all of it during that screening. I was running around, you know, doing things that the host has to do, but, it's such a cool subject matter, and equally neat. Like, I don't know if you've noticed, but every social media website, Times Square billboards, Super Bowl, everywhere I look, I see Cabrini advertisements everywhere. So that movie was a $50 million production. And my understanding is that they're spending about the same amount on marketing. It's just phenomenal. The other thing is, in my inbox this week, pretty much every single day, I have received emails from heads of major pro-life organizations, to heads of Christian organizations, to heads of Catholic organizations. Every single one of those emails is saying something about Cabrini. Go see Cabrini this weekend. I was talking to a film producer earlier who's got a project in the works, and we were talking about marketing. It's not an accident that all these groups are sending stuff out this week. The team behind Cabrini is so smart. They are so well organized. I am so impressed by how much effort and planning and strategy and common sense they put into the release of this movie. I had a professor in law school once say, it's only a lot of work if you do it. You know, you're making phone calls to influencers and saying, hey, will you send out a note to your subscribers for this movie? But the way the Cabrini team did it is so sincere and authentic. They have a way of drawing you in. Like when I first met the producers, these are producers of a major multi-million dollar movie. They took the time to schedule a Zoom with me. I'm a nobody. Who am I? I'm just a guy from Florida who lives in central Illinois. They scheduled a Zoom and they walked me through a few behind the scenes clips from the film, a few slides with their mission. Their goal is 100 million eyes will watch this movie. Maybe it was 300 million eyes. I can't remember. And they invited me to be a part of it. They didn't ask me for money. They didn't ask me to do anything in particular. They just said, what would you like to do? We want this movie to be successful. Every single person that we meet is providential and can help us with this mission. I mean, they really, in many ways, encapsulated the strategies that Mother Cabrini herself used in expanding her mission. You know, relying on the Holy Spirit, seeing Jesus in others. I wasn't in a position to write a check towards their marketing budget, but I said, look, I don't know what I can do. I would love to host a screening in Peoria, the home of the Fulton Sheen Shrine. Let's do it here. And the producers are used to getting, you know, doing screenings in LA, New York, Chicago, Miami, Rome. I doubt anybody's ever invited them to Peoria before. And they said, yes. They like the Fulton Sheen connection. Eustace Wolfington told me there's two role models in the church that he really looked up to. One was Mother Cabrini. And as a young man, Eustace is in his 90s now. As a young man, he used to watch Fulton Sheen. And the venerable Fulton Sheen is somebody who he has a lot of admiration and respect for. And those are the two, I'm going to call them saints. Fulton Sheen's not quite there yet, but I'm sure he actually is. Saint Sheen, if I might be presumptuous, and Mother Cabrini. Those are the two. And so that connection is what drew him to Peoria. And so, wow, we actually had Hollywood quality producers from a huge film come right here to our backyard and host this movie with us. And they were the most humble group of people. They were so friendly and wonderful. And I feel like I'm a part of the team. I've gotten phone calls since then from the producers updating me on the movie. Just, hey, we just wanted to update you where things are at. So in other words, what am I getting at here? Got people that are involved with something as big as a $50 million production. It's really a $100 million movie when you think about it. And it's going to do hundreds of millions of dollars at the box office based on what I'm seeing. This movie is going to do, my guess is $300 million in the next month. That's my anticipation. Let's see if it's right. You got guys that big, that important, willing to take the time to sit down with somebody they don't know to show scenes, behind the scenes footage, and to invite that person to help. What would you like to do? And I was talking to a film producer in Miami today that's got a project about the unity of the Holy Spirit that's going to be coming out. It looks like I'll be a part of that picture as well, in addition to Incorruptible and trying to pay the bills and all the other stuff I do. And I was telling him, I was like, I love this approach. Like, be accessible, be open. Don't just tell people what you want them to do. Ask them what they want to do. What do they feel called to do? You know, I can recall working in restaurants, and there was one restaurant I worked in as a young man. And there was this guy that was doing dishes. His name was Junior, Haitian fella, sort of a grumpy old guy. Anyway, Junior, he was a dishwasher. That's what he did. I got to know Junior. It turned out back in Haiti, Junior was a chef. That guy could outcook any cook at this restaurant I worked in. This was the Crab House in Jupiter, Florida. He was an amazing chef, but he, for whatever reason, he didn't go to college or anything like that. He came over here hardly speaking English and worked as a dishwasher. That's what he did. And one day I don't remember what happened. He cooked. We were allowed to mess with the grill and cook ourselves lunch when it was slow. And he cooked me up some food. It was phenomenal. And I remember thinking like, wow, like they don't know what they've got here with this guy. He's a diamond in the rough. And I can't tell you how many organizations I've encountered over the years where you get sort of this top-down approach and people assign tasks and jobs. And I've been assigned tasks and jobs. And sometimes I get assigned something that I'm not really good at. It's so much better to empower people. What are you good at? What do you feel called to do? Particularly when you're involved in a charitable enterprise like Cabrini. And by the way, it's a 501c3. Angel Studios is a for-profit company that's distributing the movie. But the producers have formed a 501c3 behind that film. And they're going to be doing a lot of charitable giving. They're not trying to make millions of dollars. There is some fund that will help fund future films potentially. So let's wish them all the best success with that film. Okay. So for the time remaining, I'm going to ramble a bit more. I have got the second annual Naples Summit coming up in Naples, Florida, March 20th to the 22nd. If anybody is listening, I would love to see you down there. This very well could be my last pro-life event for a while anyway. I have to take a break. It's just too much. It's too much work, and I've got a growing family to provide for. But I've been doing pro-life events now for over 10 years, and I've had a lot of fun with them and met so many amazing people. The Naples Summit is... we've got some big challenges ahead. So if you could keep me and the team behind that event in your prayers, we've had all sorts of issues with the venue, with just getting even people to register for it. We have an incredible lineup of speakers, by the way. We've got Tom Brekka, the chief counsel, founder of Thomas More Society, and John Henry Weston, who's the editor-in-chief of LifeSite News. Those two gentlemen have agreed to do a panel on defeating lawfare. Lawfare is a subject that I've been talking about a lot this last couple weeks, and it is the weaponization of civil or criminal justice, the weaponization of the legal system for political purposes. It's unethical. It should be illegal, but it's happening every day. We see what they're doing to Trump. We see what they're doing to pro-lifers. There are peaceful pro-lifers right now sitting in federal prison. Meanwhile, we have people blocking the presidential motorcade yesterday to the State of the Union who don't get arrested. We have Antifa and BLM throwing bricks through buildings and catching things on fire. They don't get arrested. So it's one-sided. And it's the establishment in power utilizing the system for political gain. It's activist judges putting down arbitrarily high and punitive damages for the purpose of not pursuing justice, but for the purposes of destroying political opposition. It's a dangerous game because what the people in power right now fail to recognize is that the pendulum swings and the tables have a way of turning. And unfortunately, when the gloves come off and the golden rule has been suspended, there's very likely going to be a reaction when the tables turn and when the pendulum swings. And it's not necessarily something I advocate for. All is fair in love and war. But look, let's imagine for a moment Trump gets back in. He's rightly so going to go after those who persecuted him. $400 million judgment, $100,000 a day in New York. Not one victim. the witnesses that came in from the banks testified they actually made money and that this is a standard practice. The judge in New York valued Mar-a-Lago in Florida at only $20 million based on the Palm Beach County property appraiser website. I'm from Palm Beach County. I used to do real estate. I can tell you from experience that the property appraiser website is never the basis in South Florida for determining fair market value. It's taxable value. Other places, maybe it's different, but Florida real estate is so valuable. You don't necessarily tax real estate based on the fair market value. It's taxed based on assessed value. So you have a New York judge who has no real business experience, and you've got a attorney general in New York with no business experience whatsoever trying to determine real estate valuations in a market that they know nothing about. And for that reason, imposing a $300 million fine for fraud and misrepresenting real estate values, they didn't even let Trump bring in his own expert witnesses. They wouldn't let him go after the character of that E. Jean Carroll, for example. She has all sorts of crazy posts online, like very sexualized stuff. This woman is sick. And they wouldn't let that evidence of her prior social media posts, which really diminish her credibility as a victim and as a plaintiff, they wouldn't let Trump's team introduce that evidence in the $85 million judgment there. I mean, come on. It's not about justice. It's weaponization. But what I'm really focused on is pro-lifers. Pro-lifers getting arrested for singing hymns, getting arrested for handing out pamphlets, getting citations for standing on the sidewalk praying a rosary. That's a Kamala Harris move, by the way. She did that to David DeLight in California. I've talked about that before. He exposed fetal body parts trafficking. She used SWAT to go after him. Anyway, so this is what we're up against. Lawfare. You can hear more about Lawfare at the Law of Life Summit, and we're going to defeat it. Defeating Lawfare. We've got Sidewalk Advocates for Life doing the introduction to sidewalk advocacy. We have a number of heads of pro-life pregnancy centers from South Florida and Palm Beach coming over to do a best practices session. We have Choose Life Marketing coming to talk about marketing. We have Jean Davis, who's an amazing woman who was trafficked for 20 years and has a beautiful 9-year-old son. She's coming to share her story. We have the executive producer of Abby Johnson's new film, Unthinkable, coming to share their movie. So lots of great people. It's going to be an amazing event. And we just need people to show up now. I've got all these great speakers, and we don't have a lot of registrations at this point. So pray for this event, naplessummit.com. If you want to go, if you know anybody in Florida, could you send them our way? Naplessummit.com. At this point, we've got tons of free space. We've got free food. We've got excursions. We're going to be visiting Ave Maria University, and it'll be a lot of fun being down there. Whoever goes, I'm certain, has been called to be there. And what happens after that event, we'll find out. But I think I'm going to take a long break from pro-life events after this next one and focus on family, focus on the movie, and the show as well. I'll continue doing this program. So, I'll make that announcement. You guys heard it first here, but I'll make that announcement sort of, I'm going to take a short retirement from pro-life events for a while after the Naples Summit. Anyway, you've been listening to Truth Culture Life. I'm Royce Hood. If you could keep me and my family in your prayers, we're going through a lot of transitional stuff right now with work and trying to figure out what I'm going to be focusing on. I'm feeling called to do something a bit different than what I've been doing. And so I'd appreciate your prayers as well. And thank you so much, by the way, for supporting Catholic Spirit Radio. Be sure to share this program and share the app at catholicspiritradio.com and follow me online. I'm at Royce Hood, pretty active on X these days, a little bit active on Facebook. You can always reach me at Royce@lawlife.org. Thank you so much for listening to Truth Culture Life.